This is Morgan Jones. Thank you for tuning in to this special series of the North to the Numbers podcast, presented by The Numbers FM, focused on Black women of Oregon's politics. This episode features State Senator Akasha Lawrence Spence, Portland City Council candidate A.J. McCreary, and Clackamas County Commissioner candidate Libra Ford. We discuss why these women got involved in their local politics, where they see opportunities of advancement, the dangers of being a Black woman running in a state that has a history of being hostile to Black people, and the importance of centering mutual aid in their own political goals. We also get into the details on how Akasha was able to propose, fight for, and bring to life the $62 million Oregon Cares Fund for Relief and Resiliency of Black Oregonians. Libra, being the chief operating officer for the second largest minority-focused nonprofit, SEI, and AJ's ability to raise $4 million for Equitable Giving Circle, her own mutual aid organization that fed and uplifted Black and brown folks during the fallout from the collective failures of federal and state governments amid this pandemic. If you're anything like me, finding yourself a little cynical and defeated about politics at times, these women remind us that more of us getting involved will change the political landscape in ways that will materially benefit our communities and give us a renewed hope for the future of this state. This conversation took place in the radio station's Oxmute Gallery on the fourth floor of the Portland Art Museum. Enjoy. Thank you, all of you, for joining us today. I would love if we could get some quick introductions to each of you, and then we'll jump right in, starting with Akasha, please.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, Morgan. My name is Akasha Lawrence Spence. I'm the state senator for District 18. That is the city of Tigard, Northwest and Southwest Portland. So that includes downtown Portland, Old Town Chinatown, South Waterfront, and the Southwest Hills. I am the first person in my family born in America. I am a small business owner, and I am not running for anything. I want to put that to bed. I'm not running for anything, and I'm just looking forward to supporting all the wonderful BIPOC candidates that we have this cycle.
Wonderful. Thank you. Libra.
Well, good evening, Ms. Morgan. I'm excited to be here as per usual. This is a great space, and it's a great to be with my sisters here, especially in times like this when we are running. My name is Libra Ford, and I'm running for Clackamas County Commissioner, Position 2. I'm currently the chair of North Clackamas School Board and have been for a couple years. And I'm also a mother of three superpowers, and I'm also the chief operating officer for Self Enhancement Incorporated.
We love us some SEI, right? Like forever and always.
Yes.
Thank you. AJ.
Hi. Thanks for having me here today. This is so awesome, especially in this space. As an artist, I'm always excited to be here. My name is AJ McCreary. I am running for Portland City Council seat number 2. I am not, this is my first time running as a candidate. I am the executive director of Equitable Giving Circle. That's what I do when I'm not campaigning. I am from Portland, Oregon. I'm a light-skinned Black solo mama. I have an amazing 15-year-old who just started college during this campaign, which is a really fascinating transition in all this magic and madness. I am one of the founders of Mom Block. You can find me always in community, moving boxes, feeding people, helping folks, and I'm excited to take that work and energy that I've been doing with Equitable Giving Circle, which has included spearheading raising $4 million during a global pandemic, to a citywide level, and really ramping up our community care in the way that we are coming together at a city level. We need some healing.
I cannot thank the three of you enough, because I feel like this is going to be a healing moment for me, just because Black women in politics is one of those things that's like aspirational and also makes me be like, I just want to protect y'all because it's hard out here. Shout out to The Numbers for allowing us to use this space. This is absolutely incredible. Like you all mentioned, being at the Portland Art Museum is just such a big deal, especially I'm from here, and this was not a home to Black people previously. And so to have the only Black-led radio station here and get to be a part of it is just really amazing. Mm. So I'm going to start with a question for our non-Portland natives. Portland has some unique things about the Black and brown communities compared to other cities. And I'm sure you recognized those really quickly when you got here. So let's talk about how you got here and then what inspired you to get involved within this community.
I'll kick it off. So I was a military spouse for years, and so I was voluntold every place I lived. And I chose Damascus, Oregon, because of the school district and also because of the environment. It was similar to Hawaii, which is where we were coming from.
Okay.
And I wanted something, a transition for my kids. I'm really from Harlem, New York. And so, like, my mom was like, come back home. I was like, my Aloha babies ain't going to make it. So this was like the middle ground. But I was looking for something for them and didn't really pay attention to the politics of the environment because I was just excited about making a decision for my kids without being told where we're going for the first time. So, you know, quickly we land in Damascus, Oregon, and first day of school, you know, the black mom, you realize, I probably need to step up. You know, you start off with small stuff, classroom stuff, and then you realize, oh, it's deeper than that. It's systematic stuff. So you turn into, you know, street stuff. And my street stuff turned into a school naming movement where we named the Nelson High School. And so that's where my movement started for me. I wanted my kids to see themselves where we lived. And so that movement became very personal for me. I also learned that it became personal for this community because it was the first person of color for a high school in the state. And so that just empowered the movement for me to say, okay, we got work to do.
Yeah.
And so that was it. That was my activation, just my superpowers. That's why I call them my superpowers. I look at them, and when I see something that's not right, it's like, oh, yeah, we ain't doing that.
Got to fix it.
You got to fix it. And, you know, I don't have to have a crowd to agree with me. They're enough for me to say, yeah, this has got to change.
Yeah. Mm.
That's beautiful. I want to just punctuate what Libra said and say it's the first living.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can, Justice Nelson can visit that school.
That's yes.
Right. You know, that's powerful.
Yep.
Right? That she is still here with us.
Yep.
And this is a living monument to her legacy.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get that often.
No.
You know what I mean? We don't see a lot of our black leaders, and I know this is not the question you asked me, but
nope, keep going.
For many of our black leaders, they don't get their flowers while they're alive.
Right.
That's right.
Right? They hardly ever do. I love the way that the city celebrates Senators Avil Gordley and Margaret Carter. They really do. You know,
yes.
You hear their name, their legacy is living. It's a living legacy. They continue to give to the community. They continue to be there. I can call them on the phone and have a conversation and say, this is what, you know, help me work through this, you
right.
know? And so I love that, to have living monuments to the effort and the work that they've done and their legacy is just beautiful.
Absolutely.
What brought me here? I've been talking about this a lot and framing my journey here through my illness. So I have multiple sclerosis, and I'm very heat sensitive. So when I was diagnosed the September before my 21st birthday, and we all know New York City, hot and humid and sticky in
wet.
The summer, right? Yeah, damp, you know, in the summer. And there were moments where I couldn't even go to work because I couldn't get into the subway. Because if it's 95 degrees in the atmosphere, it's 115 underground.
Right.
And I was really unwell and like really starting to try to stabilize with this illness. It was just not a healthy environment. And so I had been thinking about naturopathy and like looking into that. I was like, maybe I should be a naturopath. Maybe I got this illness so I can help people in that way. And I was looking at schools to become a naturopath. And it was NCNM here and Bastyr in Seattle. And no shade to anybody who lives in Seattle. But when I visited there, I was like, oh, you think this is a real place? And...
It's Spoken like a New Yorker.
You have the attitude like this is a real place. It's a beautiful city. Don't get me wrong. But there's an attitude there that I just didn't understand. And when we visited Portland, it was just like, I think it was the first time in the U.S. where we were among Black people that we didn't know. And people were just saying, hi, what up? Giving the head nod.
Right.
And that was really welcoming and sweet. And at first, because we are New Yorkers from Brooklyn, we were like, oh, they're trying to set us up.
Why are you being nice to me?
You're too friendly and I don't know you. Like, that's crazy. And, you know, as we stayed here, we were just like, this is beautiful. It's a city, but it's provincial at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's welcome and it has a small town feel. Mm-hmm. And so we decided, and when I say we, it's myself and my partner, we decided to settle here. And it was one of the best decisions for us. You know, it just, I'm much healthier. I don't have to deal with these, I mean, give or take last summer, right?
I was going to say, listen, heat. Last summer was a lot.
And that's another reason why we have to elect climate champions, yes. Right? Mm-hmm. Because if I'm a climate refugee, I moved because my health was at risk. Yeah. My livelihood was at risk living in an environment that is really hot and humid and something that I was not functional in for like 3-4 months of the year. And I move here to be able to have that respite, to have a place that I can function, and that's being threatened. That's something that's worth fighting for me, you know, and for so many other people. So, you know, doing that and coming here and being embedded in this community, I really appreciate the ways in which people really stick together. People are looking out for one another. When I became a house rep, that was in January of 2020, and have been doing work. I was on the City of Portland Planning and Sustainability Commission doing that work and really interrogating the ways in which civil asset forfeiture and eminent domain and all of these and highway projects and things had displaced people of color here. And to be honest, that's a story that we see throughout the U.S., right?
Absolutely.
It's something that happened in Brooklyn. It's something that I could connect to and understand. And I really became an advocate for the capitalization of Black and brown people, and specifically Black people, through real property ownership, right? So making sure that we own and maintain and keep our homes to create generational wealth.
Yes.
Making sure that we own and maintain and keep the assets in the built environment, right? Because that is the capital that we can use to solve our own problems and to be self-sufficient and to have a true community ecosystem. And that was here before,
yeah.
Right? That existed before. And so how do we get that back, right? So doing that work and doing all the things that being a part of this Black community, not just in Portland, but statewide, and coming together to build the Oregon Cares Fund, which was a $62 million fund for Black Oregonians that helped them weather the COVID-19 pandemic, which was both health and economic crisis.
Yes.
And building that with the community statewide. And so now people really love me. Like, they liked me before, but now they love me, right?
Yeah.
So that's my Portland story so far, my Oregon story.
Well, welcome to you both. I know you've been here for longer than a day, you know, but
2 days,
maybe three.
Off the decade.
If you're from here, like AJ and I, there are different, we hear a story from somebody who's come here and they are very different, you know. Hearing you say that people were welcoming, that Black people were giving you the what's up, and all of that is the Portland that I know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I meet other people that are like, ooh, Portland is shady, and these, you know, the Black people here don't talk to me. And and I'm like, where are those people? I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just saying I don't, you know what I mean? So I love to hear that story, but I also know that it isn't always like that, right? And yeah. Some people don't always have a welcoming situation.
Mm-hmm.
But before we move forward, I want to talk about how you, AJ, got involved in not just this political run right now, but give us an idea of how and why you got so deeply involved with mutual aid. Because I think people kind of skip that step. Mm-hmm. And it's so important to all of us. It's vital to our communities. And being from here, I think it's easy to not be a part of your community when you're just trying to keep your head above water, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I'm from Portland, from here. I went to Benson High School. I was with Femmes Debutante, and I was really, truly raised by the community. If it wasn't for community, not necessarily just family, but for community members, I wouldn't have went to college. I, you know, definitely had some moments as a single parent that I wouldn't have made it through, that mm-hmm. if there wasn't literal, you know, individuals who did not need to rally for me and prop me up and push me forward and say, you know, wipe my face and say, you got it. Mm-hmm. And that is especially, I mean, I had my kid at 21 and it wasn't necessarily a welcoming, celebratory, that type of moment. It was a different experience. So that has always stuck with me, and I've never forgot that from being a small child and having, you know, community and strangers rally, that experience in college or high school, college, and as a young adult. So I've always been very intentional giving back. I was also a debutante. I'm still a part of the Les Femmes organization in that program, which is it's like our local Jack and Jill, if you will. and that organization really instilled community, helping each other, showing up, volunteering, and it was always fun, right? And it's a legacy of community care and a legacy of taking care of people and being, like, it doesn't have to be your cousin, it can just be you have a need. Right. So that was definitely instilled in me, and my parents definitely are people that care about other folks and try to do their, you know, try to show up in the ways that make sense or that are feasible for them. So it's definitely in all of the ways rooted in me to show up and to participate. And I'm like, I don't like outside, so you're gonna find me hiking. So like volunteering and doing community work is like my version of that, right? And as an adult, it's been a great way for me to network, to help, like, oh, I need a different job. Well, volunteer somebody, and somebody's gonna be like, what about this?
Yeah.
That's some of the things that have inspired me. Just being a single parent, like, you have to be rooted in community in a very, very different way. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely see that's a lot of where my mutual aid work is. You know, it's easy to share, we're done with these blocks, we're done with this set of clothes, we're done with this or that. And sharing's fun. Like, it's, once you start sharing, you're like, I'm going to share more. I'm going to do, what can I share? Mm. And it's fun to share back and forth. And so I think, like, a lot of my mutual aid work is really just rooted in, like, I like sharing. Mm-hmm. Sharing is also a recycle, reduce, reuse vibe. And yep. I'm from Portland in the 90s. That was, like, the motto, you know?
It really was. I keep trying to tell people not from here. Like, we've been recycling since the first grade.
And it was the whole thing, right? Like, and everything that you can recycle. I remember recycling some lights in school, like, these lights that were taken down, and we turned them into planters.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, so it's rooted in me in a really
intentional.
No, we
didn't. Y'all did not do that.
we were out here trying to do green things for a minute. So welcome to that journey. You know, so I think a lot of my mutual aid, my sharing work is rooted in that. And I participated in 99 Girlfriends before starting Equal Giving Circle, and it's a giving circle, but it's an older demographic. It's older white women who mean well, but it was not what I signed up for. I hope to network with more young professionals, with, like, across the color line, and just, I was looking for something different, and was just, that wasn't the space for me. So pre-pandemic, I was talking about that. One of my mentors, Miss Renee, who has since passed, she actually didn't get to see EGC sort of bloom into what it is, but she was very much like, if anyone's going to make that happen, like, I love that idea. It's going to be you. Let me know. And the whole process from me talking about this, like, I don't like this, And those conversations with her, I started to be able to like formulate what we could do and pull in people, like really amazing, talented people where I was like, I'm going to pitch this and are you in? You know, Lily Ann Green was one of those people who is one of the founders of Operation Back to School. She's on the Oregon Black Pioneers board. Mm-hmm. She has a company, my God, my brain, North Star Forward. You know, it's like she's one of those people that I got to pull in and have built this amazing organization with. Daivisha Gordon, Dee Dee Hopkins has come along the way. Kean Tolton Davis is part of our board. So many amazing people, and I'm not going to get in the weeds of that. Charge it to time, not my heart. And we really were excited to, like, let's do something different, and let's also be intentional about building capital and support for Black and brown, really Black, but because sometimes how it is in Portland, we were trying to be inclusive, but for Black and brown women and femmes in business. And we started off with a kind of different goal, and then the pandemic hit.
Right.
I had been inspired by the Black Growers Gathering just right before the pandemic. I love farmers and what farmers do, and that's part of growing up in, like, where we have access to farms, mm-hmm. like going to Sobeys Island, going out to Head River and, you know, to an orchard. And I'm a marketing person, I'm a systems person and like a fixer in that way. I was like, yo, we're gonna put this on pause because this is about to happen. And my best friend got COVID overseas before COVID was a thing.
Ooh.
And she's my kid's backup. Like, she's my backup.
Yeah.
So I was like, y'all, this is serious.
It's happening.
She almost died. This is serious, you know? And so I was like, we could do this thing. We could support farmers. We could support our community members because this is going to be a thing. The whole team loved it. And we launched Equitable Giving Circle. And we launched a fundraiser. And so I think a lot of, like, that also was just like something to do in this moment when like we didn't know what to do.
Right. Yeah.
And it was really scary. And it took off and people were really receptive. Mom Block is in there because there needed some to be direction in the protest community. And we had a non-Black woman trying to make a buck off of Black Lives Matter. And I was like, not today, sis. She still hates me, and that's okay. That is her cross to bear.
That is going to be just fine.
I welcome that, but it was very, like, Mom Block was this, for me, one partially being territorial, and you're not about to make a dollar off of us. Not today.
Yeah.
And an opportunity to, like, just take my love of sharing and be intentional in community in a different way, because you know, Equitable Giving Circle has moved into a nonprofit space and is growing well in that world. And Mom Block is mutual aid, so it's very, we can pivot at any moment. We can, it's very different. It's very, very agile.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's all rooted in that, like, I love this community. This community has really raised me up. My kid Hobbs, he's a ballet dancer and artist and this, like, incredible superstar.
He's a big deal.
He's a big deal. It's so funny because he's just my baby in regular, right? But he wouldn't be this amazing artist and have the experiences and the opportunities he have if it wasn't for community. So for me, this is all just this opportunity to give back and also to build. Because something that when we're talking about liberation and we're talking about community coming together, we both have to be talking about healing. And we also have to be modeling some of the things that we've lost. And sharing is one of the things culturally we've lost across the color line. And so helping us like get back into touch with that experience and what that means. And this is something that everybody has lost due to colonization, due to capitalism, due to white supremacy. And so helping everybody, particularly our community, and when we help our community, when, like, you know, we're helping Black people, we are also helping everybody.
Right.
But getting to do that has been really intentional, and it's been life-giving. I've been doing development work, and I did not enjoy it. To get to do it in, for our community and our community has been life-giving.
It's a different development, right?
It's like a different development. It's also fun. Like, it's, you know, it's the competition that was in that space before that, like, didn't feel good. It's like I signed a grant today, and I was like, usually I'm like, today I was like,
yeah. So there is a difference, I think, about being politically minded or, you know, wanting to be active or doing mutual aid and getting your hands dirty and organizing. There is a difference between that and political action. Mm-hmm. So my question at this point is, why political action? What led you to this part in your leadership so far?
Yeah, so it's what I talked about originally, right? There are always going to be policies that are enacted upon us without us being at the table. And so, you know, eminent domain is a policy, civil asset forfeiture is a policy, all of these things are policies, right? And we also saw the public-private partnership that continues to undercapitalize Black communities, to undercapitalize Latinx communities, indigenous communities, certain AAPI communities, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, for me, entering the policy space is another way to change the outcomes of our community, right? To ensure that we at least have equal footing under the law. Now, in implementation, we have to keep fighting for it, right? Because that's the other thing I always tell folks, right? It's that we could pass a million bills and say that this is the law, but how the actors, how people in the community, how our city officials, our state officials, et cetera, use the law, right?
Yes.
Is another animal, right? And
I'm just going to pause you real quick so that if anybody is like listening to this and is like, what does she mean?
Yeah.
Somebody has inevitably said to you, there are no racist laws, right? There are no laws that say that I can discriminate against you. And that is it. It's the implementation of other laws that become just discriminatory or exclusionary.
Yeah.
And in that, it's just sort of systemic that we just keep doing that instead of. So I just wanted to clarify, because a lot of people don't grasp that portion of it, and it's very serious.
And to be honest, there were laws that said we are racist.
Oh, certainly, certainly.
You cannot be here. You know, there were those laws, and then as they repealed those. You had the practice, right?
Yep.
So it's a difference. Laws are built intentionally to be slightly ambiguous, right? And open to interpretation. And part of it is creating rulemaking, right? And creating precedents and doing all of these things to say, well, this is how the law should be implemented, right? And so I'll talk about two things really quickly. Every time you, and I'm going to use an architectural example because that's part of my background. So when you draft a law and it passes, that's like the rendering, right? The beautiful image you see that says, oh, this is what, this is our best, our hopes and dreams and what we think it should look like. And then the administrative rules, which rulemaking, the process that we're in right now, because we just had the session, we're in rulemaking now. This process is the construction drawings, right? Those big drawings that you see on site at the construction site that says, okay, put that outlet 44 inches above the ground and 6 feet from the corner wall, right? It gets that detailed, right? And so rulemaking is the details. That's the meat of the bill, right? And a lot of us don't even know that, right? We don't pay attention to it. It's not in the news. Nobody's reporting on it.
Well, and the bill passed, right?
Right, and
so everything's good now.
Pat ourselves on the back, right?
You can go back to brunch.
Right. The rulemaking is the meaty part, and you need community to be a part of that. We need it to be very transparent, right? So that we have accountability. Because then what happens is 2 years later, but remember that bill passed? I ain't get no money. Nothing changed for me. And that, I think that was my political journey, right? So in New York, I was in politics. I worked for Senate Majority Leader, now Senate Majority Leader Schumer, and, you know, worked in campaigns and things like that. And I could not see any material changes in my community. Right?
Yeah.
I didn't see any of those.
Yeah.
And so I left that world behind to work in the built environment because I said, okay, this is about decision-making power, right? This is about power, how we yield it and how we wield it, right? And too often our communities are yielding it because we are in the rat race.
Right.
We're too consumed with making money and trying to feed our kids and feed our family and doing all the things, just trying to survive.
Live.
We're in survival mode, right? And so you don't have access
access to power. You're not even thinking about it, mm-hmm. right? Because you're just in survival mode. Like, how am I going to live in this space? How am I going to eat day to day to day, yep. right? And so I started thinking about, well, how do we get power? You know, how do we find it? How do we get it? And so that's why I'm always about money. Everything that I do has money involved. Mm. I'm not just gonna, and I'm so grateful for my colleagues who do work on, okay, what are the police allowed to wear? What are the police allowed to do? All of those kinds of things. But for me, in order for us to have control over our communities, we have to have control over the capital mm-hmm. that flows through our communities. That's power, right? The reason why the police, we used to have, when cannabis was illegal, the reason why despite comparable usage, you had more of us, five times more arrests and convictions for cannabis crimes mm-hmm. than in our non-minority counterparts is the implementation, right? Yep. Mm-hmm. That bias on the street that says, oh, you're a good kid. We're not going to mess up your life. Or we know that you have a lawyer uncle or a yep. cousin, or you know a politician, or you know somebody that's going to make my life hard.
Yep.
But in our communities, we don't have that. Right? That's why half of us are in jail under bail, not charged with anything.
Not charged.
Because just we don't have access to bail money. Mm. Right? So for me, it's always going to go back down to money and capital and power. Right? So everything that I present, all the bills that I create are about how do I disrupt that? How do I get that for us?
Mm. Incredible. Mm. I'm going to ask the question again because there's no way either one of you remembers it. Right?
I remember it.
I do. You can ask it.
But, okay, so if you remember, like, why political action? Because, and for you, AJ, specifically, coming from a mutual aid and sharing sort of organizing work, what made you take that leap in your leadership work so far?
So I've talked about, like, people have said, AJ, you have the aptitude to run for political office for years. And I have talked about being interested in getting into politics in a more serious, robust way. I, in my head, this was a, like, post-40 activity for me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's something, you know, I signed up to do a merge last summer. It was supposed to start in April. But I ended up actually doing the boot camp early because, I mean, community called and said, hey, AJ, the community being this one right here, being the first, she called me. Like, I had just got back from L.A., took an intentional, 2 weeks off, just been at my best friend's house, been loved up on and just relaxed. So she caught me off guard. But it was like, AJ, I'm going to tap out of this and I'm going to tap you in. And I was like, wait, I'm sorry. And originally right when we were talking about it, I was like, this isn't the time. And my child was in the background. Yes, 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 we're doing this. And I was like, ooh. And I was very like, I need to think about it. And because of also in this race, I'm in part of the small donor election program, which means that the money that I am like, first $20 of Portland resident donors is matched 9-1. So $20 in this program becomes $200. So because of that, I had one day to file that I wanted to be in that program and to get busy on qualifying. So my kid was like, we're in, let's go. I needed to, you know, kind of check in with the teams that I'm on. I'm leadership at EGC and Mom Block, as well as Race Talks and Steps PDX, and I advise in some other spaces. And so I was like, ooh. I don't know, this is often not like, I was also teaching as a guest lecturer this past term at University of Oregon for a pilot program. And so like, I definitely was like, I don't know. But when I told Akasha, I said, let me talk about it. My kid was like,
Just
get over it.
And I heard him. He was in the background. He was like, do it.
Yeah, he was like, we're committing. This, we're going. We're doing this. And I was like, bro, like, this is actually not a you activity. This is a me activity. But I called my EGC team, and everybody was like, it was so funny. Lillian was like, why are you asking permission?
Yeah.
And I was like, because it's going to affect you. And she's like, but I want this.
Yeah.
Get off my phone. Like,
right.
Yes.
This benefits
yes.
me.
And, you know, so I like went through the list of like at the EGC team, I talked to, and just the way that we operate, we do check in with each other. And all of them were like, yes, 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 yes. Where do I sign up. What am I sending some dollars? Like, I wasn't even a candidate yet. And they were like, let's go. And so then I like also made intentional like calling some of my mentors, because I have some deep, you know, long-term mentors in the community, and all of them were like, we've been waiting.
This is time.
And I was like, wait, what? Like, it was a really uncomfortable moment. So really for me, it's like, I've talked about this. Our community has said like, yeah, this could definitely be a good track for you. And this definitely seems like the moment. And for me, in terms of like why I want to be in politics, is I really do want to be participating in the healing, right? Like, I've studied history. I also have a similar art and architecture background. I love placemaking. This is my home. I've left and come back. And we have a lot of work to do. It's also knowing the history of Portland, knowing the history of Vanport, knowing the history of gentrification that has happened here. It's really important for me also to help shift what is happening. Mm-hmm. What has happened in Oakland, New Orleans, in Brooklyn, in around our country and beyond, a lot of that has happened because of the learning and the teachings that happened out of Portland. Portland is a place that teaches urban development and sustainability. And right now we're teaching a way of erasure. And it's a dangerous lesson. And for me, as somebody who cares about history, who cares about community members as humans, not just as figureheads that are bobbing around, but as individuals who may or may not like certain foods and who walk their dogs and, you know, laugh at silly jokes. I care about those people. And what we're doing here and what's happening here is really dangerous and really important to be a place of shifting and healing. And I want to be a part of that. And I also know that I can do really impossible things. Mm-hmm. And the pandemic,
write
you know,
that down.
The pandemic has been a sort of a mirror check on that for me, right? Like, any sort of moment that I was like, ooh, my voice is shaky or I don't know, the pandemic was like, but you can do hard things. Look what you did. So for me, this is like a yes and moment, and it's an opportunity to help shift us out of this horrible place and into a better, different future. And I like to share. So like, what does that look like to have a larger platform to get to do that on?
Yeah.
And to like implement that into culture. And something that you said a minute ago, Akasha, one of my superpowers, and I love framing things of that, is that I'm good at the implementation. Mm-hmm. The rallying people and being like, I know today is raggedy and I'd much rather be in my bed, you know, watching some silly movie too, or falling asleep, because that's what I do when I watch movies. But we have a task to do, and let's do it, and we can do it.
Yeah.
So I think that's also something that we need in Portland City Hall. Our local government is so critical, and we need somebody who's intentionally about healing and who wants to bring people along. So for me, that's like why this moment is this moment and why we are on this journey.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Libra, do you remember the question?
Yeah, I do. I'll quickly tell a story. I grew up in Harlem, New York, and I remember as a kid, my mom had really powerful people around me. So first let me say that. Very powerful people that we now enjoy. And I didn't realize that until I got older, just my exposure. And they had a collective, and I remember as a kid, I probably was about 8. We showed up at an auction for a brownstone, because that's how gentrification started in Harlem.
Auctions.
They would auction off the brownstones. And so this group of really powerful people that as a kid were just like my aunties and uncles, but now everybody quotes them and it's like, oh, okay.
You know them.
But yeah, exactly. But they got together and they put their money together. And they walked into the auction. And they bought about 4 of the brownstones. And it was in that moment that I realized that they put their minds together, right? And all the things that my parents were activists of the 60s. And the movement was all about minds, right? Minds being put together. Minds being made right with these documentations that we didn't have before. And I quickly realized that I really wanted to be a part of the movement of the heart. because my parents had the mines, right? And so it became this kind of narrative that I was living with as a child that was fortified by my parents, right? Like, how do we bridge it together? We did this work, you got to do this work, you know? When are you going to do that work? How are you going to do that work? You got to do this work for our people. The minds and the hearts got to come together. And so that quickly just motivated me for leadership, period, and also intentional leadership. My family was very intentional about where they placed me, who they placed me in front of, what I was listening to, what I was not listening to. And that leadership motivation quickly turned into me writing a very clear plan for my life at 16, that in 2036 I would run for president of the United States. And I remember telling my parents that, and they were like, cool, let's do it. And every decision after that was based on that. My parents were very much the types to say, you can do whatever you put your mind to, obviously, but it needs to be something that brings our people back. And so I've always lived with that. Every decision I've made, every place I've traveled, everything that I do, it's always that reminder, right? Like, I no longer have my father, but I can still hear him in my mind when I'm making decisions. What does this do for us? How does this move our hearts and minds? So to me, the 60s was a movement of the mind, and I'm super proud of that. I'm proud of the people that did that. I believe that we are in a movement of the heart. And the only way that we can really, really feel it as experiencers on the streets is to have people in all places. Mm-hmm. And that includes politics.
Indeed.
Even if we do not like it, we have to put the people that are willing to tolerate it there.
Right.
To make sure that this bridge of the mind and hearts happens. We're all a piece of the movement, right? We may not see it in our lifetime. But another thing my family drilled in me, someone did it for you and they didn't know your name. Mm-hmm. You need to do it for somebody else and you don't need to know their name. And eventually, it becomes a victory. So that's my life journey. No matter where I go, it's the reason why I do it. I happen to have the demeanor for politics. I love the mental gymnastics of it. And I am a lover of words, so I love to slap people in the face with a sentence, and they don't realize it until they lay down to sleep.
Yeah, when they get home. And
those things all motivate me. But yeah, it's a movement of the mind and hearts, and I'm happy to do my part in politics.
This is what I mean by healing for me, because I don't need to protect y'all. Y'all got it.
No, but I'm going to have to take that workshop from Libra about fixing my face.
That's a thing.
My father was an actor, so I learned lots from him. So
I can't bring that down. Since day one, you know, as a baby making faces. Like.
Yeah. Same. My side eye was cold as a baby and just kept going.
Same. I'm going to sign up for that workshop.
So organizing is hard work. All of the mental gymnastics that we have to do to just survive is hard work. But it's even hard. It's hard even when you're tapped into the community. And where are you guys finding successes that you see some of your opponents struggling with?
Well, I'll start.
And okay.
So it's not going to be in a race context, right? It's going to be in a, I'm going to talk about the Oregon Cares Fund again.
Great.
So when I was conceptualizing this, I called a lot of people and, you know, they were just like, this is not going to happen.
It's flat out.
You can't do it. I got people saying, I got people saying it's impossible. We don't ask for money. We get policies changed. We don't ask for money because we're never going to get it, right?
Sure.
And it's impossible for you. That's why I'm here, right? Like, that's the point. Like, we all come with our own gifts.
Yes.
And that's why I'm here. I was brought here to do this work, right? Because I thought that I was going to do this short term, be in the house just for the short session. Then I was going to do a civic engagement, like roadshow, right?
Okay.
And then I was going to be like, Mike, I'm done. Thanks, guys. Everybody, peace out,
right.
You know? And COVID happened, and it presented an opportunity to do something that had never been done before. And I knew that I did not have the social capital in the Black community to do it alone. So I called up a few people and I said, who do I need to bring with me to get this done? And they listed names. And I called those people. Some of them were like, that's crazy. Good luck. We've tried it before. It's not going to happen. But call these other people. So calling. I called Nkenge Harmon-Johnson. I called Jesse Beeson. I called Joy Elise Davis and Katrina Holland. And we got together and figured it out. And we brought together the Black community across the state.
Yeah.
Elders. You know, folks who had just got here, people in the immigrant community, just everybody on Zoom calls. And that was the beauty of the pandemic. We didn't have to find a location that was centralized for everybody. You could be wherever you were in the state and get on a Zoom call. And we had these weekly Zoom calls and breakouts. Who was going to work on the finance section? Who was going to write we wrote a 25-page brief on why this should happen. The data that didn't even come out yet, right? Because this was early in the pandemic.
Very.
And we, you know, at first the community was asking for disaggregated data. There were a lot of op-eds about that. And I was like, we know what the data is going to say.
Right.
It's going to say the same thing it always says. Black and brown people are disproportionately impacted.
Yep.
We're dying more.
Yep.
We're not going to be able to bounce back. This is going to be like worse than the 08 recession. I was like, we know. We don't need the data. What we need is money. Like, we need the money, right? So we came together, and Jesse is the one who came up with the $62 million. He said the state got this amount of billions. We are this percentage of the state. We should get $62
million. Love it.
Right? So we were all like, that's a lot of money. And then I said, you know what? We're getting it. You know? And then people were like, well, even if we only get 10, and I was like, nope, we're getting it. You did the math, right? And when I talked to the governor, when I talked to the Speaker of the House, when I talked to folks and they said, where'd you get this number? I was able to say, you got this money. We are this percent of the state. This is our money, right?
I mean, is there anything else to talk about, right?
Like, this is our money,
yeah.
Right? And so for me, it was really about bringing the whole community together to create this effort, because then they couldn't call Tony Hobson and say, hey, Tony, do you know about this? You want to get your own money?
Mm-hmm.
And divide us, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't call Michael Alexander and say, do you know about this? They couldn't call anybody and say, there's some Black people doing this thing over here. Are you a part of the... You know,
you want me to just give it to you.
You want me to just give it to you, you know, or give you, you want me to just give you 20?
Right.
We brought everybody together. So we were on the same page and they could not divide us.
Huge.
It was huge. It was huge. And I remember the day, because it wasn't through a full legislative assembly that we passed this, because that would have, I don't know if that would have passed.
Right.
It was an e-board thing. But we even had Republicans vote yes, because I did the work.
Mm-hmm.
I called everybody. I talked to them about it. I said, this is why this is important. Again, we put together that 25-page document that listed all the data from before and the data that was coming out. We also signified how we were going to spend it, who was going to get it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Individuals and families. Right? Nonprofits, faith-based institutions, and our small businesses. Because for me, it's always going to be holistic.
Yeah.
You can't just give it to the individuals. You can't just give it to the businesses. You can't just give it to the faith-based and the nonprofits and CBOs. You have to fortify the entire community simultaneously for us to weather the storm. Mm-hmm. Right? And so for me, it was... That is me, how I coalition build, right?
Mm.
It's understanding my positionality, what I'm good at, what I'm able to do, and knowing how to bring everyone to the table.
Yeah.
You know, now I'm a trusted voice, but at the time, I needed other people, and I would always bring them, because we all brought different things to the table.
Yes.
Different experiences, different skill sets, right? And so for me, that was incredibly powerful.
Big time. I mean, we have never seen anything like it here. So, yes, huge.
And I don't think there has been anything equivalent across the nation.
Mm-mm. I believe that.
There hasn't. And that's why when AJ talks about this place as contentious as the history has been to black people and to brown people, et cetera, it really sets the tone. People look here for how to create master plan cities, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Our transportation system was avant-garde.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
They look to us and say, if Oregon can do it, mm-hmm. you know, because people can't, half the country can't place us on the map. They right. don't know where we are.
No clue. Right? Is that they the Northwest? Think, right, is that right, the right. West Coast?
Right, where yes. is that? Mm-hmm. Oregon. You know, like that's what they say.
We don't have roads out here. So,
right.
Them.
You know?
Or black people. So.
Right. Right. So,
we all live
so
on a farm.
To do something like that here, it shows everybody up. Why yep. aren't you doing it?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right?
With all of the you know, Oregon doesn't get a ton of money in the in comparison
no.
to larger cities, yeah. to more populous cities, to or states, and to other places that have, you know, more diversity. Mm-hmm. We just, we're down here, you know? Mm-hmm. And so to for us to be the ones that we're able to do that, that is humongous across the country.
Yep.
And also, you know, for all of the other civilized, and I say that with big air quotes, but the nations that give healthcare to their,
oh, yeah.
you know, the people that live there, you know, college, things like that, they may not have needed as much help, but this is the kind of like, mutual aid without it being, you know, exactly direct neighbor to neighbor, mm-hmm. but it's direct action to a direct community, and we're not seeing that anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's scalable, right? I think that's the part that I hope black people of Portland can really understand. Coming from such a large city, a dense city, mm-hmm. it's very difficult to scale up pilots' ideas, right? Because there's so few that are impacted with such a large need. Mm-hmm. Where Portland has a unique positioning in the nation where you have a smaller population similar to a small business, and you learn it well, and then you scale it up. And if we can really take that kind of theory and use that as one, a way to empower the black people of Oregon to say, no, you can help us fix a lot if we take that power and make plans across the nation and really implement it. I think that we have a win. It's to me the attractive part of the small community here. I think many people see it as a deficit. I see it as an asset.
Yeah, I agree. It's an asset. We have the opportunity here in a different way. We have such a small percentage of folks that we have the opportunity to actually intentionally heal and move, whether it's social programs or piloted programs from community-based organizations, to scale things, to try things out in a different way and impact. Like, I mean, like the numbers at EGC in Harlem wouldn't really feel that important, even in Brooklyn. It wouldn't. Not in the same way as Portland, right? Like just knowing, understanding the data in that way, and understanding, looking at numbers and really looking at that. You know, it's different here.
Yeah.
And it's also because of the history, we have this opportunity to really pilot healing and to really practice different practices that can then also be scaled or, you know, kind of like a pop and play elsewhere. In the same way that gentrification has been perfected here, we could be perfecting our healing processes, right? The Oregon Cares Act is one opportunity. Like, that is something that could be, we could be championing that in other places.
What I'm hearing from all three of you is changing the culture of, mm-hmm. of Portland and the state, but specifically changing the culture to be a healing culture, mm-hmm. a caring, mutual aid, taking care of each other culture. And I feel like, you know, when I was a kid growing up here in the 90s, that's what my neighborhood was. Like, I lived in Irvington, and everybody knew each other, and, you know, you could do all the things, ride the bikes and all of that stuff, and your parents knew your friends' parents and all of the things. And we don't have that now. We are fully spread out all over the place, and it's an interesting notion, I think, for it to be, you know, 2022 and talking about these things that we have all needed for so long, right? And so maybe it just takes the energy from y'all to be able to really implement that into the culture in all of the different ways that you're doing it.
I think if I could just push back a little bit, I never came here to change the culture, because I believe Black people, part of this kind of the damage is speaking from a deficit space. Mm. And I think it's more of a reminder in how we can talk from a strength-based place. Because naturally, as a people, strength is the core of us, right? But we've been impacted and have experiences that have realigned our language, mm-hmm. in ways that has been a deficit space. And so for me, everything that I do is based on that, from how I raise my superpowers to how I speak to other Black people. Like, I know we got stuff to work on, but I'm going to talk to you from your strength first. Mm. Because that's where the power is. Because once that's built up, then we all stand taller and we move in different.
Yeah.
But they know that once we do that, we move different.
Right.
So it's all about the deficit. So to me, the thing that I hope to, if I was to die tomorrow, I hope people can feel the fact that I am a strength-based believer of Black people. I believe in that first, in yes. all Black people. And that's what I see in Portland people before I see anything else. And I want them to see it in themselves.
So I'm going to push back on you and tell you that that's changing the culture here, because we need that, right? Like, I hear you speaking from a deficit-based place, mm-hmm. is definitely a thing that I notice within myself, and one of my podcast partners is kind of like, okay, Morgan, maybe we find the good thing here, and I'm like, mm-hmm. yeah, I guess we could talk about the good things. So I fully take that, and then I say, thank you for bringing that to mm-hmm. these conversations, to this community, yeah. to all of us that get to be in your presence in that way. And that does change the culture. That will, and it may not have been your goal, you know what I mean? Yeah. But that's moving us forward.
Yeah.
I want to challenge you a little bit, though, about, like, for, at least for me, like, sharing culture is part of our culture.
Oh, for sure.
And so it's not even sort of changing culture. It's more of like highlighting some of the things that are at the core of us as a community.
I think I may be a little bit misunderstood, but what I'm trying to get at with the changing culture is right now people are less, and maybe right now is unfair. Previously, people have been mm-hmm. less engaged. People have been less community-based. And yes, there are always people that are community-based. Mm-hmm. And yes, there are always people that are doing mutual aid. But we're seeing more of it now. And mm-hmm. as we see more of it and more of those people that have been organizing, been active in the community, become elected officials, mm-hmm. become people that are on boards that impact our lives, that's what I mean by changing the culture, is that it doesn't mean that Portland is different and that the mm-hmm. people are different. It means that we're, I don't love the word empowered, but we are empowered in a different way. Mm-hmm. And that does change it. Mm-hmm. And I mean that for the better. I mean that for all of us, like, getting to live in that mm-hmm. Superpower kind of base and put our shoulders back and our heads up. That's different. Being from here, you can feel real beaten down, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. that is true for Black people everywhere mm-hmm. and Indigenous people everywhere. I'm not saying Portland is unique in that way, but it is easy to get stuck in the yeah. things that are not happening. You know what I mean? And yeah. Portland has this reputation around it that it's progressive, and I just am a person who laughs at that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there are plenty of progressive people here, but it's not like we got progressive policies out here just popping up every day and getting passed, and you know what I mean?
Well, implemented. I tell people back east all the time, you're only as progressive as you are tested. So if there's only a few people to test it out, then I question yes. your progressiveness.
Yes. Yes.
It's progressive in that, like, when you think about some of the policies that exist here, like mail-in ballots, I didn't even know that was possible.
Yes.
Right? Because we come from a culture of standing in long lines.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, I only knew because the military does it.
Yeah. Mm.
So, I mean, we've always had that.
I know that you can do an absentee ballot, but I didn't know it could be a state practice that is how we vote.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And that's the kind of progressivity that they're talking about. It's not.
No, they're also. But that's they're also they're talking not, about. Yeah. They're talking about black folks
well,
too,
I'm
though.
Not, I love how both of us are really humble in the way that we're shifting norms in Portland, and I really appreciate Morgan being like, not today. Don't be humble.
Yeah,
and I want to hold space for that. Like, I really, because I saw that, I felt that, I heard that, and I just want to say thank you as somebody who's always just trying to be humbled and like focus on the work.
I will also say, let's go there then. I mean, you guys are from Portland, right? And so I think there's not a lot of space for non-natives to be that direct, right? To say, yeah, y'all need to kind of look at this, right? Because then there's this feature that comes with that's very difficult to overcome. Mm. And I think that we have to be grounded in that. And I think the first step is Portland as a whole, black people in Portland, I would hope, can start to really embrace all black people that come here, because there's something powerful if someone's choosing to be in this difficult space.
Yes.
Choosing.
Yes.
And they're choosing to say, I want to lock arms with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And knock this out the park.
Yeah.
The last thing that should happen is for someone to say, nah, I'm good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Should we end? No, I'm just joking. So speaking about Portland and the demographics of this city, when Bernie Sanders was running for president, he had a really hard time sort of convincing people of color, black people, that the core initiatives that he was talking about included them and benefited them. Mm-hmm. As black women in such a majority white space, do you find the opposite happening? Do you have to work harder to convince white folks that your proposals will not only include them, but benefit them?
Oh, I'm sorry. absolutely. I think, truly, you know, especially on the state level, right? I think I now have this marker where people believe that every bill that I create or craft that comes out of my office is going to create a constitutional challenge or a lawsuit or something,
fine.
Right? Because I am trying to create, quote unquote, discriminatory preference to people of color, right? Mm-hmm. And that was one of the biggest things that I found, is that when we talk about changing the culture and changing the fact that I don't think we're changing the culture of the people, we're changing the culture of the institutions, right? Because the institution has weaponized the 14th Amendment that we came out of our movement, our struggles against us, right? Mm-hmm. To say that when we do things, when they say that all bills are race neutral, but truly the default is white, because the data proves that we don't gain access. And then when you craft bills to ensure we gain access, we gain the equitable distribution of resources in our communities, then it's seen as discriminatory, right? And not only
amazing
folks,
how that works.
Right. Not only folks in our state, but there's a movement through the country by folks to look for bills, to look for initiatives that have reparative measures at their core and create lawsuits such that they can bring it to the Supreme Court and, you know, codify the inability for us to use race-based language or race-specific language or just certain markers that enable us to gain access where we would otherwise not gain access. And so for me, it's like, yes, with the Equity Investment Act, the genesis of that bill, Senate Bill 1579 that just passed, was to create generational wealth in communities of color who have been over-criminalized, over-policed due to cannabis criminalization and the war on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
we created an omnibus bill, because I'm a systems thinker, that said, oh, we can't just give people money. We have to give them technical assistance. We have to give them equity licenses, preferential types licenses. We have to get automatic expungement. Mm-hmm. We have to do all of these things simultaneously to heal mm-hmm. the community mm-hmm. and then to prop them up, yes. right? Mm-hmm. Because we've seen people making billions of dollars mm-hmm. off of the mm-hmm. cannabis industry now, and our communities have not gained that the revenue from that. Mm-hmm. We have not gained the reparative justice from that, mm-hmm. right? And so that was the genesis of the bill. And then when we decided to just focus on incrementalism, because you have to do a piece by piece by piece mm-hmm. because it's too much for folks to digest, we looked at just creating the equity investment fund. And that has specific markers. You have experienced discrimination based on race or ethnicity, because of your citizenship status, because of your socioeconomic status, because of your geographic location in a rural location, whether it's your business operating there, mm-hmm. you living there, et cetera, right? And so that makes it more inclusive, right? Yeah. You have to have two or more of those factors. So if you live in a rural location and you have a socioeconomic status that puts you at a disadvantage, then you can gain access to this fund. So you don't have to be black right. or brown, right? right? Mm-hmm. And so everybody gains access. And that's something that we baked into the bill so that we would safeguard it against legal challenge, so that we would safeguard it and ensure that it passed. But also that, you know, one of the things that I've understood that our movements have understood for a very long time is that our liberation is tied to one another, yes. right? Mm-hmm. That you're not free if I'm not free.
There it is.
Right?
Yep.
And so I have no problem with providing for our marginalized rural communities who mm-hmm. are not black and brown. Right. right? I have no problem with that. The issue that I have is when there's no provision for us in all the other bills that pass. Right?
Right.
That takes care of our communities. Mm-hmm. Right? I want reciprocity.
Yes.
Right? Again, no problem with doing it in our bills. No problem with making sure that everybody, every Oregonian is truly provided for. But let's see it everywhere.
Yes.
That's equity.
Mm-hmm. This is what I mean by changing the culture, too. Like
mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying, yeah.
These are the things. Like, without having that lens, right, and understanding that we see it in L.A. right now where just people are making money hand over fist. And black people are still in prison right now for, you know, a very small amount of weed.
And still walking around with felonies. That's the other thing.
Yes.
Right? You could be in prison or you could get let out of prison, but if your record is not expunged, your
Good
life
luck.
Is still dramatically changed by that conviction that mm-hmm. should be stayed, right?
Yeah. Right.
You can't gain access to FAFSA. You can't gain access to an SBA loan. You can't gain access to certain jobs. Like, you can't...
There's housing you're not going to be able to get.
There's so much housing. I mean, you can't even go live with somebody
right.
who is in public housing or in any kind of HUD-regulated housing.
Right.
Right? Because you have that felony.
Yeah.
So how are we setting people up for success? And just my last thing, you also are coming out with fines and fees.
Right.
Restitution.
About to
you also have to pay for your parole. I mean, Multnomah mm-hmm. County just created a rule that you do not have to do that any longer. But for a long time, mm-hmm. you get out of jail, you have no job, you have nowhere to live, and you got to pay $35 a week for parole, plus any drug testing. You
right.
have to pay for all of it. And that is another way that wealth is seeded from our communities.
Yep.
Yep.
Completely. I know that we're running short on time, so I
just want to say I appreciate everything that you just said, Akasha.
Yes.
And, you know, when we talk about what we're doing and how it impacts everyone, we've also seen a reverse, right? Like, what has been done to us and the impact on everyone. Because I always tell, you know, I'm in Clackamas, so very different from Multnomah. Mm-hmm. But I'm intentional about it because I also know as the work of Multnomah is happening to fix a lot of wrongs, many of the people that we're talking about can afford to live in Clackamas.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But yet all the rules ain't there. And so we're being criminalized. It's is happening out there. So we have to change that. Because we are neighbors. But I also want to say that as we look at all this stuff, and we know it's coming to a neighborhood near you at some point, and that's the first thing that many white folks need to understand, it's coming to a neighborhood near you. Just wait for a second. Just live a little. But the other part about this work that's so important for them to kind of grasp, was I'm not sure if they'll get in this generation, is at the end of the day, what you do to others will come back on you. And we as a people, and I'm speaking specifically about black people, we have always been nurturing everyone. Mm-hmm. We have never shown this country anything different. Mm-hmm. And so the mere fact that my stand up is seen as a way for you to tell me that I'm against something, mm-hmm. is... it's just historical isms brought up all over again.
Right.
And I refuse to accept them, and I refuse to stop the movement, because I think we all know that what we're doing will impact everyone in a positive way. We have breastfed their children, and this is just another figurative way of us doing it. We show up and we breastfeed you. You are being nurtured no matter what, so stand down. It will be okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
So I have so many more questions, but we are running short on time. So this is one that I absolutely have to ask, because it's a thing that I'm just trying to keep my eye on, and I want everybody else to keep their eye on it, and I know that y'all are already keeping your eye on it, and that is People for Portland. What the hell are we gonna do? This is a group with lots of money that is dark money that we don't really know where that money is coming from, but we can figure out where it's coming from in the way of places we don't want the money to come from. Because they have so much money and have clear initiatives for themselves to hammer home, and they're doing a really great job in the way of being vague about things, and by that I mean those billboards that are like, shouldn't everyone have a home, or whatever it is that, you know, like, you're like, yeah. But that is absolutely not their point, right? And their point is not to make sure that there is housing for people or permanent housing for people. What can we do to... Or what are some initiatives that you are hearing about that we can start to kind of combat this particular style of politics? Because I feel like you were saying, Akasha, there are things that you hear about, right? There are things before it hits the news, before it hits the town, there are things that you're hearing as a politician that's like, oh, wait, no, you're going to do what now?
Public servant,
excuse me.
The other
thank
P,
you,
the
thank
other
you.
P,
sorry,
the other P.
Apologies. I'm going to strike that from the record. As a public servant. If I was in a room, you know, when they were coming up with this whole idea of People for Portland, I'd have been like, let me go get my bullhorn and tell the entire community what's about to happen. Do you guys have, is your finger on the pulse of any other things or things that that particular group is out here planning to do that we haven't seen yet? I just want to know how we combat these things.
I will go first. So one of the critiques that I have about our side of things is that we're always on the defensive.
Yes.
And I'm just tired of that.
Yes.
Part of why this very small minority is able to be so loud is because we give them attention.
Okay.
We feed it to ourselves. We take the photos on our Instagrams and we say, oh, I'm so upset about this.
Okay.
We are giving them more fuel. We're making them relevant. Mm-hmm. Right?
Okay.
If we and again, it's not just ignoring. It's a different kind of, it's if we create an offensive strategy, right?
This is what I'm talking about.
We create an offensive, right? We get together and say, what do we want to see? Not what are they doing and how do we combat that? What do we want to see? What are the messages that our community needs to hear from us?
Okay.
How do we talk to the people that are really the majority here and really want to see change, really want to put people in homes,
yeah,
right? Are not trying to just put them in, you know, forcible camps, right? These are camps, right? They're trying to keep them out of sight and out of mind,
yes.
So that and criminalize them if they don't go along with their policies. What do we want to see? How do we nurture each other? How do we uplift mutual aid? How do we really create the Portland that we all deserve to live in, right? Mm-hmm. Let's create an offensive. Let's stop being defensive. Let's stop talking about them and making them relevant. These people, yes, they have money. Yes, they are powerful because they have money, and they'll be able to get mailers into people's back. But can't we get our money together to get mailers out?
Well, so that's
can't
what I'm
do
saying.
These things? You know, we can do all of the things that they're doing if we come together and create an offensive strategy, not a defensive one, right?
I'm super here for that, and I want that to be the case. I hate being on the defensive, and I can't imagine honestly why we are when, like you said, it is not the majority of not just this state, but it's not the majority of the country
anywhere
that is like, no, lock those people in cages and do this, and you know, like that's not the majority, and we are consistently being like, wait, but don't you care about humans? And I would love to see the money get brought in a way that allows us to have an offensive. I think part of it is like lack of imagination, right? Mm-hmm. And we just don't know how to see the world that we want to live in. Oh, am I? Is
so,
this a setup?
So AJ and I were having this conversation earlier today, and I'll let you jump in with this, but I think that's the problem, right? Is that too often the people on the right side of history don't understand how things work.
Yes.
We don't understand that we too, me, you, Ambush, everybody in this room can start a pact tomorrow, and we can get money.
Well, first
money.
We have to make sure that they have a PAC. Let's be clear.
That who has a PAC?
These people for Portland.
We don't have to make sure they have a PAC.
Well, to me, that's part of it. Understanding the system is knowing that they don't even have a PAC.
I see.
That's true too. But we cannot operate on with what they're doing. We have to use our own tools, right? So maybe we don't start a PAC. Maybe we just get our money together. Whatever it is that we do, we pool our resources to put out our own mailer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Get it in everybody's mailbox. We do all of these things. We're more than capable. There are people on the right side of history with a lot of money as well. Right?
Absolutely.
And so we just have to create the environment for them to send their resources and do the thing, right? Send it out. Get it out there, right? It's not going to always be about knowing what their moves are, because we can't know. We're not even in those circles.
Yeah.
Right? A lot of us are not in those circles.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
What is that club that they have here? That club? Okay, well,
club?
See, I can't even remember. It's not the Mac Club. It's another club that they're a part of. No. I can't even remember the name. But we're not in those spaces.
Right.
We're not there, right? But we are in our spaces, right? And we can pool our resources together to be on the offensive, right? We could create a mailer that says, elect AJ, Joanne, Libra, and these, you know, what have you. We can do it.
Yeah.
We can do it. We have the people in our community who have worked on campaigns, who know how things work, right, on that level, who know how to put out a mailer, who know how to graphic design. We have all of those tools. We just need the person to get everybody together.
I would, yes to all of that.
Mm-hmm.
I would say in the immediate response to what's happening with People for Portland, get behind local candidates.
Yes.
Like, show up and get behind us. We've been in community doing work. We've been out here advocating and moving mountains. Anybody that sees People for Portland is upset, you know, I'm running, ajforportland.com, send a donation. Joanne is running, send a donation. Sign up as a volunteer. Sometimes I think we get stuck also that our power is rooted in just money, but there's power in our networks. There's power in, like, you know what? I can make 10 calls for you today. I can commit to get rounding up 5 donations. They're going to do whatever they're going to do over there, and it's going to be raggedy and miserable and full of no rhythm or fun, and we can do our own jam over here. And we've been doing it. It's been happening. Mm-hmm. A part of, I think, really combating what is happening with People for Portland or any other Yahoo group, because they're just very different.
They just keep rolling through, too.
Yeah, they keep popping up. It's like they are organizing, and they are rallying together and pulling resources and being intentional. They are intentionally saying, oh, I'm going to hire your son, or I'm going to hire your daughter. You've got a job here.
Yep.
We can do that. Mm-hmm. And we can do that in the now. This isn't a future activity. This is a right now activity. And it's not even like that much of effort. I also do think that like the coalition building, intentional power building of really like getting behind Black and brown candidates, getting behind young women and femme candidates, that's really real, and we do need to have some intentional support building and the ways that we're moving. And the quick thing, like right now, if you hear those People for Portland, oop, I'm going to get 5 donations for AJ. I'm getting 5 donations for Joanne. Like, I'm getting 5, donations for Libra, because I know they're running right now. And so every time I hear that, whoever you are, if you're listening and you're upset, that. Like, be a part of that legwork, and you don't have to be official volunteer. Mm-hmm. You can literally be like, I am resharing, you know, Libra social media and saying, who else can match my $20?
Right.
Yep. It's also understanding the power of that. Yes, they might have more big money, but we have generations of coalition building, of collective movement, and bringing lots of people together to move one thing. And so if we lean into that history and that knowledge and that experience, we're going to be more powerful than them. Because while they have money, they don't have a good sense of community.
Right.
They don't have a good sense of a beat on that. Like, when I hear my opponent talk about people, I'm like, who did you talk to? Can I get that list? Not to like fight that person or argue with them. I just am trying to also like, where did you hear this?
Who are these people?
Where do they live? Like, yeah. Because I'm in my call list got all kinds of demographics of people, and I'm like, I never heard this. I talked to small business owners; they never said that.
Mm.
So I think it's like it's really intentional in the ways that we're building power and the ways that we're coming together, and also realizing that there's a lot of power and just like, you know what, I'm gonna get this whole block activated.
Mm-hmm.
And that just be it. You know, like that's the thing of mutual aid is you got a little bit, I got a little bit. My favorite story is Stone Soup, and that is this idea of like we all come together and you bring the potatoes, you're bringing the onions, I've got carrots, you're bringing meat, Ambush is bringing spices, you know, and you know, other folks are bringing bread and someone's bringing a salad and maybe someone's gonna get fancy and bring a wine. Now, my onions is just some onions. I'm not gonna eat onions by itself, mm-hmm. but all together, yeah. we've got a banging meal
with spices. You need the onions for the soup, right?
Like we've got it together. And I think that like we need to bring that mentality into all the spaces, especially combating these problematic groups who do not have the community's interest. They do not have individuals' interest, and their whole point is to arrest people.
Yeah. I also think it's important. All these things are important, and I agree about us focusing on offense. But as an ex-basketball player, I know defense wins games.
Right.
And so you got to have it all. You can't just be a shooter. You can't just be a defensive player. And so I think we need to activate folks in where they're good, you know, and what they're good at. If people are good at creating offensive strategies, that's where they need to lie. Some people are good at creating defensive strategies, you know, the mole in the room, the person that's listening, so that we can have that information. I think historically, I come from a Delta Sigma Theta. That's how we won 113 years ago, by placing people in very strategic places to understand what defense we needed so we all stayed alive.
Mm.
And so I think it's all necessary to play the full game. We can't just have one side, and we gotta put people where they are naturally moved, and some people are moved by negativity, right? And that's what activates them. True. And we gotta allow that to be, but we need to have a full plan. There needs to be an immediate, there needs to be a middle plan, but we need to have a long-term plan, and it needs to include it all. And if we don't have people in those clubs, we need to put them there. If we don't know what they're doing, we need to get it. We need to figure out what's going on, and while we're doing the offense, have that intel, because that's what they do to us.
Absolutely. You answered, AJ, you already answered my last question for the most part, I think, and that is, how can the community get involved in your initiatives and be most impactful in your campaigns? And any projects that are not running for office, but how can people be most impactful? Money is definitely a thing, and I want to continue to reiterate to anybody who ever hears my voice that small dollar donations are a very big thing, and that is speaks to the stone soup that you were just speaking of, like this. We can have a little and make a very big impact as we put it all together. So don't think that your $5 is not going to do anything. It absolutely will. Give your $5.
20.
Give your 20.
Portland residents know if you give me $5, it's matched to, it'll be 50. So, like, you can feel good about that. I feel good about it. Like, just putting that out there.
Mm-hmm. I'll start. You know, I think running in Clackamas is a new phenomenon for black people. And I'm excited about that and what it means for our future. So yeah, I need treasures, talent, and time. So if your treasures are something that you can afford, I definitely need those. I don't have a match in Clackamas County. You can give me as much as you want or as little. I have no cap where I am, so definitely need that. And you don't have to be in Clackamas, but know that you experienced Clackamas at some point. And so you should have some investment in this, because this is my face and my name, but this is for all of us.
Right.
This is for us to be able to move through the state and not be trapped in one area and not feel the freedom of traveling this beautiful state, mm-hmm. For which everybody wanted a piece of, you right. know what I mean? And so we all deserve a piece of that at any time. And then talent, if there's something that you do well, yeah, come on, let's do it. And I definitely can use it. And in time, there's lots of things that we're doing and volunteering to do. And so any of those are helpful. And then a phone call here and there to say, you know, thinking about you and making sure that, you know, hearing that others are thinking about you is really powerful when in times like this. And then last but not least for me is just remembering that for me and Clackamas and all of us, this is not a safe thing.
Right.
And so making sure that you have your eyes and ears open, and when something comes up, that you inform us, mm-hmm. Because we are not safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I just to keep with the basketball analogies, I feel like the best defense is a great offense.
She's and been waiting.
And so, spoken like a true point guard.
Right? So for me, it's again, like, we're constantly on the defensive when we have the electeds who are not representative of our issues, right? It's much harder for us to get the work done,
yeah.
right? And so this right now, May 17th, we have an opportunity to craft a really great offense, right? To get AJ elected, to get Libra elected, to, you know, to do these things, because it's much easier to get your point across, to have somebody listen to your voice when they are already there,
yeah.
right?
Absolutely.
To change, I agree with you, Libra. This is a movement of the heart. One of the things that I always give, and I give, I'm going to, I should have brought one for you too, but I give everybody, well, you don't have one inscribed by me, so I write a message inside.
Yes,
everybody.
I give this book
to everybody. Like, all of my legislative colleagues, no matter what side of the aisle they're on, I give it to everybody, right? I have given it to almost everybody in this room as well. And so for me, it's like grounding yourself in
the philosophies and the movements that have gotten us to where we are, because it's no small feat that we're even able to do this work, that we're even able to serve in this capacity or to craft campaigns to serve in this capacity, right? As Libra said, it's dangerous.
Yep.
When we were doing this work, people said, "What's your security plan? Where do you live?" You know?
You're
that's
like, what?
Real. Your life, your life. I mean, ask Joanne, they tried to frame her, right? That's not, that's serious business, right? Like, we are literally.
With a whole felony.
A whole felony.
I just
felt
like that. Go.
That was insane, right? So, we are literally fighting for our lives when we do this work. And so, to ground the community and to ground everybody in this love ethic, in this caring ethic, to really wrap their arms around us and to have those phone calls or those text messages that say, "I'm rooting for you, I hope you're okay," or to drop food or whatever it is, right? To mutual aid these systems of care that our communities have always relied on. That to me is going to help us stay throughout this storm, right? Like traverse this sea, right? Like no matter what happens after May 17th, we're still gonna need you. We're still gonna need to keep fighting.
Right.
Yeah.
The fight isn't over.
The fight
Whether
isn't
you win
over.
Or lose. It's
not gonna. Yep. We have a gubernatorial race this year that could change the entire trajectory of our state.
Big time.
We need to turn out.
We do.
Big time.
People don't vote
like more than they ever did.
One last thing I'll say. The last day to register to vote is April 26th.
Yes.
Please, I know that there are parties that do not represent your interests. I understand that. But you cannot vote in a lot of primaries unless you are a registered Democrat or Republican.
That's right. Yes. Oregon is a closed primary
That's
state.
Right.
We are
Period.
A closed primary state.
We have
state.
To choose one of two, whether you know you don't like it or not. Or
right.
You have to choose in order to vote in the primary. You can switch it back
Do
whenever you want.
Do not be a non-affiliated voter during election year.
No.
It is detrimental.
Yes. And vote down ballot, please.
Yeah,
go pass
ballot.
The measures. Keep going. Keep going.
Yeah. Go through your entire ballot. But, you know, do the whole thing.
Yes.
You know, but really, 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 the last day to register is April 26th. Please register with a party. Because these are critical races, and we have to ensure that our people get through.
Yep. I'd say, I mean, I'm going to just plug my stuff real quick again. I'm like, I'm always the humble person. I'm not going to be the humble person. Thank you for
you
that
can't.
Lesson today.
You, this is
thank
not
you
the
for
place.
That lesson today, Morgan. I will take that. Thank you, thank you. For me, it's definitely come and get involved in my campaign. Like, you know, come help make phone calls, send money, make a donation. Whether it's $5, it's $20, or caps out at $250. If you are married, you and your spouse can also do $250 each. So you can help in that way. Come do the things. I really am having a learning campaign, really trying to explain the different parts and the different things. So come and get involved and learn with us, with me. A part of the goal with that is, how do we also build out this bench of people who know and understand campaigning, who are ready to do it, who have like kind of tested the waters? Do you have the aptitude? Because this is a fast-moving space.
Right.
This is, you got to pivot every day. My campaign manager and we're able to laugh about it, but we're like, what's the pivot today? Right? Like, what is that? So come along and learn and join. I'm going to plug EGC, Equitable Giving Circle. We are feeding people every single day, and it's magic, and it's beautiful. And it's one of the things that's in this moment keeping me grounded. Come volunteer. Make a donation. Right now we're passing out all kinds of canvassing stuff that actually was happening before me campaigning, but like it's happening in that way too. But come and participate. We've got a really awesome event April 23rd for Earth Day. So we're celebrating that. And we have a really awesome event coming up for Mother's Day. So come out and join us. Come to the pantry. Volunteer. like help us build community in that real way through care. And also like it's an opportunity to network and vibe out. So I'd say for, you know, for me, come and get involved and get your hands dirty. And that's a really beautiful way to like grow and heal and also just be in community in a different way. So I'm always going to say, come. I mean, I always need volunteers. I will always put you to work. I always have something. I have a beat on somebody else who needs help. So even if you can't help me, I'll send you to Race Talks. I'll send you to, you know, the Mayo House, or I'll send you somewhere.
Right.
And you can find me easily anywhere online. AJForPortland.com though. So yeah, that's my plug. Come and get involved. Come and do the things.
I cannot thank y'all enough. Seriously.
Thank you.
This has been such a great time. I would like to keep going, but I understand life is life.
I needed this today.
I didn't realize how much I needed this.
I need this today, and I am grateful. This is a nice campaign moment for me, for sure. This is a highlight.
Oh, I am honored to hear that. Like, I honestly didn't know how much I needed this, and this has been absolutely incredible to talk to all three of you in a more in-depth way than we would be able to hear at a debate or a new soundbite in any way. And I know that the community that listens to this radio station is going to be very excited to hear this, because this is hope. And I just want to remind people that it really is like our limits are our imagination. And I know that that sounds corny and somebody's granddaddy told you that, but like, it's real. And if we don't start to truly imagine the world that we want to live in and the communities we want to be in, then we can't create them. And I just want to thank you all for creating those environments that we all want to be a part of.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.